As I said, I'm Scotty B., an alcoholic, and I am the impromptu 10-minute speaker. I may go 11 to 15, but we'll see. I always get a little bit nervous about this stuff, speaking, because I still suffer from extreme inadequacy. And you know, on the front of this, you know, we always talk about sharing our experience, strength, and hope. And I've reached a point today where I feel like sharing our experience doesn't necessarily mean the experience when I was out there drinking. My experience that I've had since I've gotten sober. And but sometimes we need to share that experience when we were out there drinking, because it brings that familiarity and brings newcomers into the meetings to let them know they belong. But I can say, as I said, extreme inadequacy, I never felt as if I belonged. You know, I come from a fairly good family, and nothing was ever enough. You know, I remember 3, 5, 7, 10 years old getting everything I wanted for Christmas, but I didn't get that one gift, and I was just off the hook because it wasn't enough. And I have 2 siblings, and they were happy. It's like, so there was some kind of different. So at the age of 14... You know, I do want to share. You know, I went to a parochial school. I was taking advanced learning and on track for college prep. And I took my first drink at about the age of 14. And by the age of 16, a vice principal, Mr. Bob Perez, asked me to leave high school. So in a matter of 8 years, I went from here to here. And it did not take long. So I did the next indicated thing. I continued. You know, we were partying. We were having a good time. I found a group that I felt like I belonged. Because that's all I ever wanted. You know, I just wanted to be a part of humanity. I just wanted to be a part of society. I just wanted to be comfortable in my own skin. And not knowing any better, because I still don't know what I want, I don't know what I need, and I still don't know what's good for me. I didn't know then, and I don't know today. But I reached this point. Fortunately, I took a California High School Proficiency exam, because I wasn't old enough for a GED yet, and you know, got that high school diploma tick off. And I'm sharing this because, you know, I didn't drink for years, you know. I had a what I would consider a fairly short downfall. At the age of 23, I checked myself into a rehab, and I celebrated my 24th birthday in rehab. And that was January 23rd, 1989. I went into rehab. So in 10 short years, I went from these fabulous plans, this fabulous illusion of life, to rehab. And I remember this rehab in Tulare. I went in and talked to this old guy. His name was Frank. Had a big white beard. And I was young. I'm, you know, like I said, 23 years old. And I'm thinking, what can old people teach me today? So, you know, he went through his spiel about coming into this recovery home. And I answered all the questions. I answered all the questions right. Because that's one thing I could always do. I could always answer the questions right. You know, I could fill out a piece of paper right. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, I'm going to learn how to drink like a gentleman. I'm going to learn how to drink like I used to drink when I was 14 and 15 years old. I'm going to learn how to no longer be a partier, unemployable, a lousy husband, a bad father, and they're going to teach me how to be human again and drink a little bit. Little did I know, and I say that, you know, I always think about that when they talk in the book about, you know, the various methods we tried to stop. I never tried any of that. I went from drinking to rehab. You know, I never switched. I never did this. I never did this. None of that ever crossed my mind. That wasn't part of the deal. So anyway, I go into this rehab, celebrate my 24th birthday, and they introduce me to this fellowship. That was the greatest thing coming out of there. They introduce me to this fellowship that has saved my freaking life today. And I say that with earnestness because it still blows me away today how my life is. And that's part of being sober and in recovery for me. And there's a part of when I first got here, you know, this recovery home, they made us go to outside meetings and stuff. And I think for me, this is very important to share. I went to a meeting in Tulare, my first AA meeting. Because I had multiple, you know, stuff that went along with the alcohol. So I go to my first AA meeting, and it was, I think, Hillman Healthcare. And one of the old-timers, you know, book-thumper guys asked me to share my story. And my primary reason for going into this rehab was for other substances. And I'd never been in an AA meeting before. You know, I remember maybe as a teenager I saw a TV show on where they talked about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought that was movie stuff. I didn't know Alcoholics Anonymous existed. You know, it was just part of the movie. And so I actually went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And this book thumper, God bless his soul, he's not around anymore. There was two of them book thumpers, one in Tulare and one in Porterville. God bless both of them. But I go in this AA meeting and I share my story. And not knowing anything, I share about all these other substances. And this hardcore alcoholic book thumper basically told me, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not welcome here. We don't talk about that here. And if you don't know what the hell you're doing, you don't need to be here. That's my interpretation. I just know that I got yelled at. I got berated. I got belittled. And I felt like I did not belong in these rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I never want anybody to ever have to feel like that. Because I stayed away from these rooms for 5 years after that. I would not go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting because of you people. And that's not what this fellowship is about. And I've learned all this. This is a fellowship of love. Lots of love. And that's something I didn't have when I got here. I gained that here. So I'm going to tell you how I gained it. You know, I stuck around. I didn't believe I was powerless over alcohol, but I knew my life was unmanageable. The alcohol was, you know, just part of the life. But, you know, I couldn't stay married to the same wife. You know, my kids had it bad. I had a $50 truck payment and got the truck repossessed. I couldn't stay employed. My life was unmanageable. So I worked those first few steps. But I never got into working a four-step, taking a look at my personal and moral values. And I did that for about 7 years. And see, prior to that, when I went into this rehab, they took me back and showed me these steps on the wall. You know, the scrolls that we see in rooms? And I'm like, those may work for you, but I'm never going to do them because they're stupid. I'm too cool for that. My ego and my look good would not allow me to do those. Because I was holding on to the past. I was afraid of change. I was afraid of becoming somebody that I did not know. I was afraid of becoming the unknown. You know, my greatest fear was the unknown. You know, I am very grateful that I made a decision. You know, in desperation. And that desperation came when I was going through my third divorce from the same wife. Because we never previously got divorced. And let me share about that real quick. Take about 30 seconds. So we filed for divorce because we never liked each other, but we couldn't stay away from each other. And the first one, we just took no action, so the court dismissed it. The second one, I don't know, I'm about 4 years sober. you know, we filed for divorce again. We've done counseling and all that stuff. You know, I'm hiding out of her bedroom window with a machete because I'm going to kill him when he comes out of there. And fighting for custody of my kids because I'm more stable than her. You know, and today, you know, that's one of those funny stories where we have, you know, no regrets. And that divorce, we never got divorced because it came about 30 days before the finalization. You know, and I went down to the courthouse, got that dismissal paperwork, signed my name, signed her name, went to the courthouse in Visalia and filed it. And we were having a conversation about the kids. She said, look, we're going to be divorced in 30 days. And I looked at her with this big shit-eating grin and said, no, we're not. And, yeah, you know. And needless to say, because the insanity of that relationship, we moved back in together. And then finally, you know, like I said, got divorced. But this was all sober. That's what I'm sharing. This was all sober because I wasn't working the steps. So at about 7 years clean, when we're going through this third divorce, I'm sitting at home because she filed for divorce and I am just devastated, curled up on the floor in a fetal position, thinking of ways to kill her and chop her up and send her around the state and never tell anybody because that's how you get caught. And this is sober 7 years. And finally, that point of desperation came where it's like, I am in so much internal turmoil and pain, I will try it your way. So I started working the fourth step. Started working steps 1, 2, 3, and 4, and started looking at my personal and moral values and taking an honest look at me and taking an honest look at all this pain that I did not know existed within me. And by doing that, my life changed. So that's what I say. We don't need to be afraid of these steps. We don't need to be afraid of change. We don't need to be afraid of what's to come. There's always a miracle out here to my right or to my left. I just have to do some work to become aware of that miracle. It's there. I run into them all the time. When I went through this divorce in 97, I called my daughter because it was her 13th birthday. And I'd coached her as a kid. And we had this beautiful, loving relationship. And I said, hey, honey, I called you to wish you happy birthday. And she said, don't ever call me again. You're not my dad. My T.O. Moy's always been more of a father to me than you. And that kid, we didn't speak for 3 years. And I share that because it's okay. If your kids aren't speaking to you, it's okay. Maybe it's not time for that to be happening in your life today. Today, I don't even answer the phone when that 35-year-old calls me because she calls me all the time. You know, the miracles of this program, of this fellowship, and what I had to do to make that change, I had to give up my children and give them to God. You know, God, may you find him now. You know, I found a God. I found love. My life has changed dramatically. You know, I went from being unemployable to paralleling two careers. You know, I wanted to join the service when I was 17, and I thought this isn't going to work out very well. Because I wasn't ready to stop. So I ended up joining the Navy Reserves and then got about 8 years of active duty. Then got off active duty and ended up spending 21 years and retiring from that. But since it was the Reserves, I was paralleling that, retiring from the county and putting 21 years. Things that have happened in my life have nothing to do with my best thinking. It all has to do with me doing the footwork, doing what does not come naturally to me, and doing what I've learned from you guys and listening to you guys. And, you know, like I said, I got here in 89, stayed sober about 2.5 years, and went out and did it in one night. And so I don't have 30 years, but December this month, along with this young lady I love so dearly, we just had birthdays. And I stuck around here longer than I ever expected. I became a believer in these steps that I thought they were stupid. I have had a dynamic change up here in my head. And even though I still suffer from extreme inadequacy, I feel like I am a part of humanity today. And that I am a productive member of society and giving back instead of taking. And the sponsor I used to always say is, the having is in the giving. And I truly believe that today. The having is in the giving. So anyway, I got 10 minutes, and I'm extremely nervous when I start. But once I start talking, man, I could go for another 2 hours. Anyway, so that's all I got. Thank you for listening. Good morning, AA. Welcome back from the 10-minute break. At this time, I take the pleasure of introducing our main speaker, Jacob. Woo!
Morning. My name is Jacob, and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank everybody for being here. I'm grateful to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous today, and I'm grateful to be around people that are just like me. You know, I'm gonna qualify myself. I'm an alcoholic, I'm a drug addict, and I'm a sick individual. Right? So I fit right in. My sobriety date is January 1st of 2018. So that is 11 months and 9 days today. All right. What it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Born and raised in the Central Valley. Grew up in Wasco. Don't hold that against me, please. Came from a good family. Southern Baptist and very, very conservative. Grew up in farming. I played baseball, football, wrestled in high school. You know, I played all the sports, Little League. Used to go on mission trips with my high school group down to Mexico to build churches and run vacation Bible school for, you know, the kids down there. I took my first drink when I was 16 years old. It was fun. That's what all the guys did. You played sports. You had fun. Had a couple beers after a game. And I always wanted more. You know, one was never enough for me. Two was never enough. It was never about the one that I had. It was always about the next one. How can I get the next one? How can I get more? I'm an extreme person by nature, so I like to push the envelope on anything, everything. If it's bigger, faster, more expensive, I want it. And I want it yesterday. I don't like to wait for anything. Did well in high school. Did so well in high school that I thought a great idea would be, instead of going to a regular college, I was going to go to West Point. In 2003, I was granted with a congressional nomination from Congressman Bill Thomas for the Military Academy at West Point. Unfortunately, my SAT scores were 50 points too low for West Point. They require a 1550 SAT score. And I said, well, no problem. I know what I'm going to do anyway. So I went and enlisted in the United States Army right out of high school. January 1st of 2004, I went to basic training at Fort Knox, Kentucky, and spent 13 weeks there learning how to be a soldier. I found a home there. I'm very egotistical, so I enjoyed the fact that I was a 3%er. 3% of the United States population will serve in the military. Me. I'm part of that 3%. I'm exclusive. The job I chose when I went in the military, I was a combat medic, which, for those of you that are not familiar with that, with the military, a medic in a combat unit is the next best thing to God, which fed my ego. I was, I really do believe that I was 10 feet tall and bulletproof. You know, I went, completed my training at Fort Knox, Kentucky, and went to my training school at Fort Sam Houston, Texas. I earned my EMT license. And from there, I went on to airborne school and air assault school because I wanted more. I wanted to jump out of airplanes. I wanted to rope out of helicopters. You know, just being a regular soldier wasn't enough. I wanted more. You know, and for any of you that have ever thought about jumping out of an airplane, it's great. It really is. Scared me shitless, but it was great. You know, the first time I ever jumped out of an airplane is with Fort Benning, Georgia. I was up in a C-130. I was only about 5,000 feet up in the air, and it was a tagline jump, and I was scared to death. Got to the jump ramp, and I said, nope, I'm not doing this. And I got helped out of the back of that airplane by my airborne instructor, and I discovered something that was better than drinking. I discovered an adrenaline rush, you know. And I continued to jump out of airplanes. I have a total of 52 jumps. 4 of them were combat jumps. My first duty station was in Vicenza, Italy, with the 173rd Airborne Brigade. It's an active jump unit, and at 18 years old, what better way to start your life than to be stationed in Italy? You know, I got to travel the world. I got to drink in every major city in Europe. I've partied from Barcelona, Spain, to Prague in the Czech Republic. You know, and I loved it. January of 2005, I deployed to Iraq with the 173rd Airborne Brigade. I saw my first combat action about 4 days into country. Little town north of Baghdad called Fallujah. That's where I saw, and that's where I found the next best thing. I discovered that the closer you are to the edge of death, the more alive you feel. And it's even better when you're drunk and you have no fear whatsoever. I spent a year in Iraq, mostly in Fallujah and Sadr City, which is a northern suburb of Baghdad. I have a religious upbringing. And it was while I was in Iraq that I determined there can be no such thing as a God. After the things that I saw, after seeing women and children used as weapons of war, after seeing the things that people do to other people, I wrote off God completely. No such thing. And if that's the case, there's no such thing as God, hey, guess what? I'm God. I'll make my own rules. I'll live life my way. The whole idea of life on life's terms worked perfectly for me because they were my terms. I did exactly what I wanted, when I wanted. I didn't care about the consequences. I was slicker, sicker, and quicker than you. You know? And I could drink, change the way I feel, and not care about the consequences. It's simple. After my deployment to Iraq, I got stationed in Germany with the 1st Striker Brigade, and I discovered that the national pastime in Germany is drinking beer. You know, and unfortunately for the Germans, I had to prove that, you know, I'm an American. We're back-to-back World War champions, and I can drink you under the table any day of the week. And I showed that to them, I think. But I was a blackout drinker. Don't remember what I did. You could show me pictures and videos of the things that I did while I was drinking, and I would deny it. Wasn't me. Didn't do it. Can't prove it. Jake, we got video of it. It's not me. It's not me. 2006, I deployed to Afghanistan. That deployment to Afghanistan reinforced in my head that there can be no such thing as God. But it was also during that deployment to Afghanistan that I heard for the very first time my life was unmanageable. And I didn't believe it. Everybody in the Army drinks. Everybody in the military drinks. And they operate. They function. A lot of highly functional people that drink. While in Afghanistan, I completed a couple of missions with the 10th Mountain Division. What was happening was we were integrating units. My best friend and battle buddy from basic training and from training school was a medic for the 10th Mountain Division. And we were at a small fire base in the tribal region. And we had this agreement. Because we didn't believe in God, there could be no such thing as God. We would decide how our lives would go based on the flip of a quarter. Flip a quarter, you call it in the air. Let fate decide. We pulled a combat mission that day, and it was a routine six-hour patrol through three villages. I had this habit because I believed I was 10 feet tall and bulletproof. I always rode in the lead Humvee with my guys. Trigger pullers are on the ground. I'm going to be with them. I'm going to be up front. I'm not going to ask them to do anything that I wouldn't do myself. My buddy Chris had the same idea. So I go to climb in this lead Humvee, and he tells me, "Hey, what are you doing, Jake?" "Well, I'm riding with my guys." "Well, it's my job. It's my job." So he pulls out a cord. He says, "Call it in the air. That'll decide who goes in that lead Humvee." He flipped that quarter, I called heads. Tails came up and he went in that lead Humvee. 3 hours out of that base, that Humvee hit an IED. The driver, the shotgun rider, and the gunner up on top were killed instantly. Chris, because he was riding the back seat, ended up with glass and shrapnel in his throat and third-degree burns over 90% of his body. By the time I got to him, he was going into shock and lost massive amounts of blood. And he couldn't breathe. Well, hey, I'm a medic. I'm God on the battlefield. I can save him. I can save my battle buddy. Of all people in the world, the one person that I trust, no questions asked, I can save him. I don't need God for this. I pulled the glass and shrapnel out of his throat, stopped the bleed with my fingers, and allowed him to breathe periodically by pulling my fingers in and out. And due to weather conditions, we couldn't get an air medevac, so we drove him back to base. 3 hours back to base, with my hands in his throat. Got him to the operating table at the fire base, and this doctor tells me, "Hey, Sergeant, you need to pull your fingers out so I can operate." I told him, "Fuck you, I pull my fingers out, he dies. I can't sew his esophagus back up with your fingers, you're going to have to pull them out." As soon as I pulled my fingers out of Chris's throat, he flatlined. The doctor spent 22 minutes trying to bring him back before he called time of death. Walked out of that hospital, out of that triage room, and crawled inside of a bottle of Jack Daniels. First time in my military career that I didn't change my uniform. I didn't clean my weapon. I was still covered in mud, blood, and grime. Crawled inside of a bunker and tried to kill myself by drinking myself to death. The following morning, my first sergeant pulls me up out of that bunker, stands me up, and he tells me, "Sergeant, your life is unmanageable and you need to unfuck yourself right now." I told him, "First Sergeant, I just had a bad night. Things went way bad." He said, "Yeah, I understand that. But you've been having a lot of bad nights lately. You need to square yourself away because we still have work to do." put your feelings in a box and lock them up. We got guys that still need you. So I did. I put my feelings in a box and locked it up so tight that I refused to carry his casket onto the airplane. I refused to accept that failure. I continue to justify my behavior. I continue to justify my drinking and my drug use because there was no God. I couldn't save my best friend in the world. And at that point in time, I had written off humanity completely. I didn't care anymore. As far as I was concerned, I permanently changed the way I felt by being numb. After my deployment to Afghanistan ended, I discharged from the Army March of 2007. Had no idea what I was going to do. All I knew was I had to go back somehow. My idea was I was going to go work as a contractor and go right back. Because maybe somebody will get lucky enough to kill me. Didn't know you had to take a drug test to be able to go work for these contracting companies. Couldn't pass it. So I decided, hey, you know what? I was a three percenter. Now I'm going to go and be even more than that. I'm going to go live completely outside of the lines. I'm going to go live completely outside of the normal society that exists here. And I decided that I was going to continue to feed my alcoholism and my drug addiction by living a life of crime. You know? Hey, I know how to kick in doors. I know how to put people on the ground and take things from them. I did it in Iraq and Afghanistan. How hard can it be here? And I did. For 6 months. Before a level 1 ATF task force chased me down after a 3-state crime spree. I spent the next 10 years in federal prison for robbing 6 gun stores in 2 states. While in federal prison, I continued to drink and use and basically live life on my terms. Didn't care. I'd as soon talk to you as stab you. Why not? November 7th of 2017, I got out of prison. Had this great idea that I know how to live life now. I know how to get around laws and rules. I'm quicker, sicker, and slicker. Nobody's going to catch me again. I knew how to drink. I knew how to carry a gun. I'm going to be never going back to jail. And that plan worked. Worked beautifully. For 9 days. 9 days. 6 U.S. Marshals rearrested me and sent me back to jail. You know? While I was sitting in jail, I was okay with the idea of going back to prison. I knew that's what was going to happen. You know, they're going to, 9 days, you're out on probation for 9 days. The federal government doesn't care about that. They're going to send you right back. They got a box for me. They got a box with my name on it. You want to act like an animal? We'll put you in a cage like one. I was okay with that. The Veterans Justice Outreach Program stepped in and petitioned the United States District Court on my behalf. Asked the judge, why don't we offer him some help? He obviously needs it. He's a decorated combat veteran with PTSD and some drug and alcohol addiction issues. Why don't we try giving him some help? And the judge asked me. He gave me a choice. I've never had a choice before. He gave me a choice. Hey, you want to go back to prison for 2 years? You want to try this program? Well, how long is the program? 60 days. Done. Even before he had it out of his mouth, done. Because I had this desperation. I had this gift of desperation. I didn't want to go back to prison. As comfortable as I was in that environment, I just didn't want to go back. I was only out for 9 days, man. I want to live life. And it was presented to me that I was going to go to a PTSD and mental health program through the VA. Cool. I'm going to address some of these issues, learn how to cope with that. That way I can keep drinking and doing what I want to do. And they dropped me off in Porterville. It's like, wait, what? They dropped me off at this facility there, and I read the sign on the door. I read the sign on the building, and it says, Porterville Alcohol and Addiction Recovery. Oh, I don't need that. I'm not an alcoholic or a drug addict. I'm good. I don't need this program. I don't need you people. You're not like me. I don't have a problem. And it was presented to me by the counselor there that, well, then go back to doing what you're doing if it worked out so well for you. If you're comfortable and you're okay with what you're doing and you like the results of what you're getting, go back to it. There's no locks on these doors. But if you want something different, try something different. So I stayed. I said, okay. 60 days, I'll play your game, I'll do your program, get the judge to sign off on it, and then I'm done. I had no intention of working a program. I didn't want to be sober. I was counting the days when I can go and pour that bottle of Jim Beam into a shot glass and throw it back. Didn't give one shit either way. They require you to go to these AA meetings, right? So I did. I went to the one required meeting a week. The Tuesday night men's stag meeting in Porterville. The first 3 weeks, I sat there and I introduced myself as Jacob. Refused to admit I was an alcoholic. I refused to admit I was powerless over anything. Don't you know who I am? Don't you know what I've done? I'm 10 feet tall and bulletproof. Oh, you don't think so? I've got 2 deployments and a service record to prove it. I'm the next best thing to God. I'm not powerless over this. And I continued with that for 3 weeks. I had that moment of clarity. I was sitting in one of those meetings, and I was sick and tired. Sick and tired of being sick and tired. Tired of the chaos. Tired of the insanity. And it was all because I lived life on my terms. I chose that chaos. I chose that insanity. I was comfortable with it. Sitting in a meeting, and I listened to this gentleman who had 30 years of sobriety. And it was real simple. This is a simple program for me. I'm a complicated individual, but he made it real simple. You get the opportunity to live life based on one contingency. Don't pick it up. Don't pick up that first one. And I've heard them all before. You only got to change one thing. Okay, cool. What is it? I'll change it. Go back to doing what I was doing. You have to change everything. For me, I knew that that meant I had to change the way I think, the way I act, the way I interact with people. I have to change the way I speak. It's been suggested that I change the way that I walk because you don't have to walk like you're going to a fight every time, Jacob. Okay. I'll work on that. For me, this program saved my life. By the grace of God, yes, I do have a God, not the same one that I grew up with, but I do have a God of my understanding today. And He was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself the entire time. Me, this ungrateful, egotistical, alcoholic, drug addict, don't give a shit about life, sick, twisted individual, my God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself the entire time. There's absolutely no reason why I'm any more special or any different from anybody else that served in the military and has been deployed and has seen combat action. Bullets don't care who you are. They find a home. It doesn't matter. It doesn't make me special. It doesn't make me special because I'm a complete idiot and I decided I wanted to go to prison for 10 years. God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. There's nothing about me that's special enough to say, yeah, I deserve a program. I deserve a chance. No, I really don't. I'm glad I don't get what I deserve. My God today has a plan. And guess what? I don't need to know why. Today, for me, this program, this fellowship, allows me the opportunity to live life on life's terms. I never had a problem with, even as a kid, I never had a problem with trying to fit in, trying to be a part of. Man, I played sports. I was an athlete. I fit in with the athletes. I was decently smart. I had good grades. I fit in with them too. You know? I fit in the military. I got along. You know, I did well. Never had a problem fitting in. Except in my own head. I was never okay with me. For a long time, I believed that I was that one that got away. Not because nobody cared. People care. I do believe that. Today, I believe people care. They've always cared about me. But they thought they cared. If they knew me like I know me, they would take off running the other direction as soon as they saw me. All right? That's what my head tells me. That's what my disease tells me. You know? The thing is this fellowship, this program, you people in these rooms kept saying it over and over and over again. We'll love you until you love yourself. Liar. Keep coming back. You don't want me back. Yes, we do. Liar. We'll love you until you love yourself. You can't because I don't even like myself. I'll never get to the point where I love myself. Don't drink. See how it feels in 30 days. Keep coming back. See how it feels in 60 days. Okay, I'll do that. I'll prove you wrong. You're not going to want me back. I have friends today in this program, people that legitimately care about me and tell me, even today, hey, keep coming back. I'm starting to believe you guys. I think you know? I'm starting to believe you. And I'm grateful for that. From the very first time I walked into an AA meeting, I was welcomed with open arms. No questions asked. You know? I walked in full of anger and hatred and resentment. Keep coming back. This ain't gonna work for me. I told my sponsor, I said, I think I was about 15, 16 days sober, and I told him, this ain't going to work. This is not going to work. I'm too sick and twisted in the head for this to work for me. But I'll make you a deal. I get to 30 days, maybe it'll work. That word maybe has gotten me through each and every day of my sobriety. And that was okay. My counselor at the rehab program at Parr, he told me, he said, look, if I told you that you went and talked to that tree out there in the patio for 30 minutes a day and I guarantee you don't go back to prison, would you try it? Well, yeah. Hell yeah, I'll try it. Why? Because it's something different than what I had been doing. This is a different way of life for me. But it had to be a different way of life for me. There's one of the pages in this big book that I keep coming back to, and I probably read it 4 or 5 times a week. Page 62. Selfishness, self-centeredness. That we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. I think it's amazing they wrote this book in the 1930s and he knew he was talking about me. 100 forms of fear and self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. My whole life has been about me. What can I do for me? You want honesty? I joined the military to make myself look good. I knew what I would look like in a green uniform with combat boots and a red beret. Looked pretty badass, thank you very much. You know, chest full of ribbons. Looked pretty badass. You know, I chose a job in the military that was a minority. I was one medic out of 140 guys in my platoon, or in my company. One. 139 other guys got the same job description. They do the same thing over and over again. I'm special because I'm a medic. Selfishness and self-centered. From birth. I'm grateful that this program for me is not just about don't drink, don't use. Right? I mean, step 1 and step 12 are the only 2 steps that even mention alcohol. Okay, that's pretty easy. I mean, I don't have to drink. But all the other ones, you know, 2 through 11. What's that about? Well, for me, that's how I live life. Those are steps for life today. Something that's not selfish and not self-centered. Something that's about other people. One of the things that I had the hardest time with understanding in these meetings, in this room, you got to give it away to keep it. That's about the dumbest thing I've ever heard. What do you mean I got to give it away to keep it? That doesn't make any sense. Really? Try it. Okay, cool. I mean, I've tried everything else I've tried everything else that they've suggested. Why not try this? Guess what? Giving it away, I get to keep it. Being of service, I get to stay sober. You know? And it's an amazing feeling. It's really a gift. You know? And this has been this has just been one gift after another. The first gift that I got in sobriety was that gift of desperation. And it was a selfish gift of desperation in my mind. I just didn't want to go back to prison. That gift changed. It became a gift of desperation for something different. Okay, I found something different. Stopped drinking. Life got a little bit better. I'm not worried about six U.S. Marshals rearresting me today. I'm not worried about my probation officer sending me back to prison. That's something different. All right, cool. That gift of desperation changed again. Became a gift of desperation for an opportunity. An opportunity to live life. To experience life. Instead of watching it on a TV screen through a window that's about this big, that has bars on it. I get that opportunity today. Guess what? That gift of desperation changed again. Now that gift of desperation is giving it to somebody else that needs it. Like I needed it. I think it's an amazing requirement for membership here. The only requirement for membership is that you have the desire to stop drinking. That's it. You don't have to have a college degree. You don't have to own your own house. You don't have to own your own car. You don't have to have a bank account with six or seven figures in it. Those aren't requirements. The only requirement is the desire to stop drinking. And then the even more amazing thing is the one that comes right after, well, two more after that. To carry this message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Because guess what? There's sick people out there. Sick people just like me. I also have this gift of desperation to change one number in life. I want to change the number 22 to the number 21 one time for one day. Because like me, there are veterans out there who suffer from this. They drink to numb their feelings. They drink in the hopes that they're going to die. And 22 of them a day commit suicide. 22 veterans a day decide that it's easier and softer to end their life through drugs, alcohol, or putting a gun in their mouth. There's an answer to that. Right here. They don't drink. And then you look at these other steps. They show you how to live life. Right? That's what I want. I want the opportunity to save just one. For one day. That's it. I want that number to be 21 for one day. Because guess what? They're worth it. I'm worth it. One of the greatest sayings that I've heard in these rooms is, don't leave until the miracle happens. Right? I'm in a room full of miracles today. I know a lot of you personally, and I've heard your stories. It's a miracle. It's a miracle that I found a place and a fellowship and people that with no questions asked, welcomed me and kept welcoming me. So that's the gift of desperation for me today. That gift of desperation came from a God that I didn't acknowledge, a God that I didn't believe in, a God that I refused to even contemplate that there was one. And I don't care I don't care that he's a different God today than he was when I grew up. The God of your understanding has you here for a reason. Has me here for a reason today. I thought the reason was I was going to cook breakfast and then, you know, go sit in the back and drink coffee and relax. They say you got to give it away to keep it. Okay. I cook breakfast. I do that pretty good. I like it. You know. So what's the reason I'm here today? Guess what? I don't need to know. I don't need to know why. I believe and I have faith that my God has a reason for everything that goes on in my life. Always has. There's a reason why my battle buddy Chris died in my arms. There's a reason why I went to prison. There's a reason why. And guess what? I don't need to know. And I'm okay with that today. That whole we'll love you till you love yourself thing. I thought I was different, right, from all of you people. I thought I was more sick, more twisted. For a long time, I believed you can't wash blood off. It never comes off completely. That stench of death and destruction doesn't come off, right? But maybe. Maybe it has to work. Maybe if I do these things that are suggested today, it doesn't smell as bad. That monster that lives inside me gets a little bit smaller each day. And he's still there. I mean, just because I quit drinking doesn't mean I don't have other issues. I still have other issues in life. You know, that's control, manipulation, self-will. Those are still issues I deal with today. You know? But there's this great thing about this program, right, that I really do believe in it, and it's worked for me. I can restart my day over anytime I want to. And those thoughts come in, those ideas, you know, hey God, take this thought and show me something different. It fucking works. It does, right? It gets better. Take your hands off the steering wheel. Because like you, my best thinking got me here. If what I was doing was working out so well for me, I shouldn't be here right now. You know? But that's this program for me today. And still, I rely on maybe a lot. Maybe if I don't drink today, I get the opportunity to do something. Not for myself, but for somebody else. Maybe, if it works today, and if I get tomorrow, and I do the same thing, guess what? I'll get that opportunity. Maybe, if I go talk to that tree out there for 30 minutes a day, I won't go back to prison. That's about the dumbest thing I ever heard. Right? But if that's the suggestion, if I go talk to that tree for 30 minutes instead of drinking, I don't go back to prison, guess what? I'm in. Me and that tree will be best friends. Give me 2 days, I'll tell you that tree's life story. Because it's something different. It's anything different than what I was doing. That's what this program is about for me. Anything different. You know, the doing the same thing over and over again, the same exact thing over and over and over again, expecting a different result. And not just doing the same thing over and over again. I mean, it went from, it's a deadly progressive disease for me. I went from being in the military to 6 months I was in prison. Got out of prison, and guess what? 9 days. From 6 months to 9 days, like that. What's the next one going to be? Do I get another one? That gift of desperation says, you don't have to worry about that anymore. You choose. Don't drink. Don't pick it up. You get the choice of whether or not you want to live life on life's terms. Simple. And you do the next right indicated thing. For me, it has to be a big flashing neon sign. Thank you, God, because I'm stubborn and hard-headed. But it's not about me. It's not about my self-will for life. Tried that. Didn't work. Today, I'm grateful. I'm a grateful alcoholic today. I'm grateful that this program was here waiting for me. I'm grateful that you people were here waiting for me. And I'm grateful that you said, we'll love you until you love yourself. Still think you're crazy, but I'm starting to believe you. I'm starting to believe that this program is going to work for me. Today. One day at a time. That's all I got. I'm Jacob. I'm an alcoholic.